Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first edition of Figure Four After Dark. Project I've been talking about doing for a long time. We've talked about it on the other radio shows. I've addressed it on the board. I was amazed at the amount of feedback that we have for the show. And for those of you that have not been listening to the programs or been on the board or been on the front page, I'll just very quickly explain what this is going to be. It is a non-wrestling show. We're not going to talk any pro wrestling. We're not going to talk any mixed martial arts. What this is my homage to a show that I loved growing up. A show that was actually one of the two things that really inspired me to do this website and these wrestling radio shows. When I was a kid, there were two things that I always wanted to do. I wanted to be a wrestler, loved pro wrestling, and I loved the Art Bell Show. I loved reading about weird things, whether that be UFOs, Bigfoot. I was always a big fan, of course, of the Loch Ness Monster. And as I grew up, I really enjoyed all of the shows that Art did, not just on those subjects. I love reading about technology. I love reading about history. I love a lot of different things that have absolutely nothing to do with pro wrestling or mixed martial arts. And when I mentioned the idea of wanting to do a coast-to-coast style show, a lot of people were really excited about the idea. I did not know there was this kind of crossover. And I guess when I think back to the heyday of Art Bell, and really when I was reading Art's book a couple of weeks ago again, I was amazed at the fact that I remember Art Bell shows seemingly from when I was like a child, as I mentioned earlier. And in reality, Art really was in charge of that show probably from about 1993 through about 2001 full time. And 1993 was the year that I graduated high school. And I guess just I discovered him after I graduated, and it became part of my life for many years after that. I loved that show. And Coast to Coast AM is not what it used to be. Art Bell is gone. He, as of, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, retired. He's done with the show. He's not even part of it anymore. He had done guest hosting here and there. Those were always my favorite shows when Art came back and guest hosted. But he's not even doing that anymore. And there's a lot of talk about what's going on and whether he'll ever be back. And I don't know what the deal is. But I was really sad when I heard about that. And I mentioned it here on the shows a couple of times and made mention of the possibility of doing my own version of the show. And people were very excited about it. So that is what this is. And as mentioned, a lot of interest about a lot of different things. Today's show, we're going to be joined by Carl Stern, who, of course, everybody knows from the website, wrestling historian. But what some people may not know, if you've only heard Carl on my show, if you've never listened to his program, Carl is a cop, and he's a cop in Haleyville, Alabama, and it's out in the middle of the woods. And Carl shares my love for all things strange. And as a cop, he's heard a lot of stories, and he's seen a lot of things. And we're going to talk to him about that tonight. He also has followed pretty much everything, perhaps even more seriously than I have. I've spent most of my time involved with pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and obviously that is not going to change at all, so I don't want anyone to be concerned. But in my spare time, I like to read about different things, and now I'll probably step it up in terms of the paranormal and, you know, various weird things. I'm reading a book about weird things around Washington and probably go investigate some of them. In fact, today I am probably going to head out to Longview, Washington. They have a sister store for the Seattle E-Old Curiosity Shop. For those of you that have been out there and seen that, there's a sister store down there. So I'm going to check that out and kind of study some of the strange things going on in Washington and hopefully do a show about that one of these days. But today's show, we're going to talk to Carl about a lot of different things that have gone on in Alabama. And for those of you that follow this sort of thing, Alabama and Huntsville in particular are supposedly very haunted places. In fact, in a list of the most haunted places in America, Huntsville is near the top of the list. And that's going to be the subject of today's show. The next show may have nothing to do with hauntings or UFOs or anything like that. It may be a show on technology. I would love to have Michio Kaku on this show, one of my favorite guests of all time. David Hatcher Childress, one of my favorite guests of all time on Coast to Coast, talking about, well, all sorts of things. Egyptian relics in the Grand Canyon, one of my favorite stories. And I should note, before we go any further, that I know that a lot of people are big fans of these things, and there have been suggestions made for various guests. And I'm not going to mention names, but some of these guests I don't really want to have on this show because I consider them to be completely out of their minds. And maybe that's actually what would be the charm of a show like this, is to have people on here that are completely out of their minds. But I don't want people to think that, like, I'm a complete nut. Because, if anything, I am more a skeptic than anything else. I've read about Bigfoot my entire life, but quite frankly, I don't really know if I believe that such a thing exists. Because the idea that there is a giant beast, and by giant, I'm talking like, you know, this thing, there are reports of it being 8 to 10 feet tall, you know, something like that out in the woods that has not been discovered in 2011, I find that hard to believe. Now, I have traveled around a lot, and obviously living in Washington, there are a lot of woods and forests around here. And I will say that sometimes when I travel through I-5 and I look at the forests, or I go over the pass, for example, you know, heading to the eastern side of the state, there's a lot of woods. And when you think about the idea that there's one or you know, there are roads, but I mean major highways, there are very, very few cutting through this state. And you think about all of the forests and the trees, and, you know, there's that part of me that thinks maybe there is something in there. But I am not convinced. And really, the purpose of this show, part of it for me, is to learn more about all of these things with everybody listening. And it is going to be the goal or the job of the guest, really, to convince me of these things. I've studied a lot. I've read a lot of different things. The best evidence I've ever seen about Bigfoot, for example, are some of the plaster casts that show the dermal ridges, the casts that show detail, far more detail than you would get if, for example, you carved a foot out of wood and strapped it to your foot and stomped through the forest. There's some very intriguing casts that have been made of Bigfoot prints, and at some point someday I hope to have a guest on to talk about that. And I am intrigued by the Patterson film. I think everybody who has followed any of this or knows anything about Bigfooters, even read about it, or actually probably most people, whether they even read about it or not, have seen frames and images from the Patterson film. That is an intriguing film, and there have been a lot of things written about it. There have been a lot of shows on it, and a lot of books written about the Patterson film, and a lot of scientists interviewed and talked about, and some insist that it is a hoax, and others insist that there's no way that a human being in an ape suit could create this film. So I'm very fascinated about that, but I'm not sold either way. So again, the point of that whole deal was that I have an open mind about all of these things, and I want to learn about a lot of different things, and I'm fascinated by all of these things, but I don't necessarily believe that any of these things are true. And perhaps evidence will be presented to me where I will listen to it and go, you know, I believe that. I can believe that perhaps an alien craft crashed at Roswell. I don't necessarily buy it, but from reading a lot about it over the years, I've read a lot of things, and I've listened to the testimony and read the testimony of a lot of people that were there during that period, and I am firmly convinced that something happened. And I don't know what it is, but again, that will be the subject of another show with another guest down the road. So that's kind of the idea of what this show is about. If you've got suggestions, if you've got ideas for guests, if you think that you would be a great guest, then drop me a line. Brian@WrestlingObserver.com is the email address for now. Perhaps we'll set one up specifically for this show. Perhaps we'll set up an area on the board specifically for this show for ideas about themes and guests and subjects and that sort of thing. And constructive criticism. If you have ideas about the format or things that we should cover, things that we should not cover, I'm telling you right now, I have no desire to talk about politics or religion on this program. And after we've done several shows, I do plan on doing unscreened open lines for a segment on the show. And once we've done a few, people have an idea about what to call in about. I would prefer if people, I realize I said they were unscreened open lines, but again, I don't want people calling in and talking about the next election, for example. I don't think anybody really wants to hear about that. If you want to hear about that, there's a million shows that talk about that sort of thing. This is going to be an alternative to Coast AM, or a complement to that show. If you enjoy that program, then hopefully you will enjoy this one. And if you don't enjoy that program for whatever reason nowadays, then hopefully this program will be something to fill the void. It will not be every week. We're probably going to do it every few weeks. Depends on when we can get a guest and when we can get a good topic. I don't want people angry if the show does not show up on a particular week. This is, again, a hobby of mine. This is a labor of love. You're not being charged anything extra for it. Many of the shows probably will end up being free to spread the word around the internet, various sites. We'll see how it goes. But that is the idea here. So again, any suggestions, any ideas for guests, you can always send those to Brian@WrestlingObserver.com or post them on the board. Again, like I said, I may open up a separate forum just for this program and just for things like this and build up a community there of people that are interested in this sort of thing. And maybe Carl would be interested in being a moderator for that section. I'll talk to him about that. But those are my ideas. Again, it's the very first show. It's a test run. We'll see how it goes. As noted on the Brian and Vinny show yesterday, the way this works is it's kind of like a secret show. And part of the reason for that is I want this show to be up on Friday nights, on the weeks that we do it, at 10 p.m. on the dot. That means I have to set up the website to automatically post it at 10 p.m., which it makes it very difficult to do other things like post it on the board or put it on the RSS feed, that sort of thing. I may have Tony put it on the RSS feed afterwards, but again, it's not something that people are signing up for necessarily, so it doesn't necessarily need to be on the RSS feed. I'm also, as noted, going to be out of town tonight. I'll be in Longview and Cannon Beach, and so the website is going to have to put it up on its own, and then everyone else I will rely on to hopefully post it on the board. So that's the way it's going to be. It will be automatically posted at 10 o'clock p.m., so the show always airs at night. For those of you that really are into this, you can all check it out exactly at 10 p.m., and basically I'll listen to it together. Right now, we're not going to be able to do a live show. We're just going to do it like we do all of the other radio shows, but that is the way it's going to work. I'll give people heads up on when the show is going to take place, and then on those Fridays at 10 p.m., head up to the website on the front page, and the show will be there. A brand new episode, and hopefully fun times will be had by all. Want to open up with something I always enjoyed from the old Coast to Coast, look at some of the interesting news of the day, and then when we're done with that, we'll get Carl Stern here on the show. Wanted to mention that a couple of different interesting stories. As noted, I'm interested in technology and science and things like that, so stories like this intrigue me. This story here is from the UK Telegraph, telegraph.co.uk. Mammoth could be reborn in 4 years. Something that's been talked about for a long time. And you could actually go back and some of the interesting stories and movies of the past have kind of been based on this. It is something that at one point was science fiction and is now potentially becoming real life. And of course, it's going to have people bringing up questions of, could we have a real life Jurassic Park? And I guess we shall see, but I guess the idea is to start with something like the mammoth. The woolly mammoth, extinct for thousands of years, could be brought back to life in as little as 4 years, thanks to a breakthrough in cloning technology. Previous efforts in the 90s to recover nuclei and cells from the skin and muscle tissue from mammoths found in the Siberian permafrost failed because they had been so badly damaged by the extreme cold. The story, by the way, by Julian Ryle in Tokyo. A technique pioneered in 2008... by Dr. Teruhiko Wakayama of the Riken Center for Developmental Biology, was successful in cloning a mouse from the cells of another mouse that had been frozen for 16 years. Now that this hurdle has been overcome, Akira Iritani, a professor at Kyoto University, is reactivating his campaign to resurrect the species that died out 5,000 years ago. He says, now that the technical problems have been overcome, all we need is a good sample of soft tissue from a frozen mammoth. He intends to use Dr. Wakayama's technique to identify the nuclei of viable mammoth cells before extracting the healthy ones. And basically, they would take a cell from the skin tissue of a mammoth, and they would take the nuclei and insert it into the egg cell of an African elephant, a currently living African elephant, and the elephant would act as a surrogate mother for the mammoth, a 600-day gestation period. And if this works, the African elephant would give birth to a woolly mammoth. So, more on the story is at the Telegraph, telegraph.co.uk, and we could talk about this on future shows, hopefully get a scientist on here to talk about that. And in related news, in fact, also from the UK, the Mail Online, scientists create a genetically modified super chicken which does not spread bird flu. A genetically modified super chicken that does not spread the deadly bird flu has been developed by scientists. The bird is intended to prevent the outbreaks of avian influenza, which led to millions of birds being slaughtered. can also stop new strains of flu mutations and domestic fowl and spreading to people, leading to killer worldwide pandemics. The British team behind the GM chicken says it is, quote, inconceivable that its meat or eggs could be harmful. However, it will need rigorous safety checks before it can go into the food chain, they said. I'm not sure about the idea of inconceivable. I suppose it's possible, but inconceivable seems like an awfully strong word. Anti-GM campaigners warned that genetic engineering was not the answer to stopping bird flu. Said the public could never accept GM eggs and meat. Not sure about that. There's a lot of genetically modified food out there that people are consuming every day. Avian flu is a serious threat to farmers and people. Although it does not easily infect humans, when it does, it can be deadly. The story is up at dailymail.co.uk. Check it out. Interesting story there. And finally, Fox shoots man. When I saw this headline, I had to click. It's from Moscow at Reuters. A wounded fox shot its would-be killer in Belarus by pulling the trigger on the hunter's gun as the pair scuffled after the man tried to finish the animal off with the butt of the rifle, the media said Thursday. The unnamed hunter, and quite frankly, if this happened to me, I would prefer to be unnamed, who had approached the fox after wounding it from a distance, was in a hospital with a leg wound while the fox made its escape. The animal fiercely resisted and in the struggle accidentally pulled the trigger with its paw, one prosecutor was quoted as saying. It talks about fox hunting being very popular in Belarus, which borders Poland. Fox shoots man. You can't miss it if you're looking around today in the odd news section of whatever news aggregator you use, but there you go. I've dealt with my cats, and I have no doubt that if I were struggling with my cats and there was a gun there, there's a strong possibility that one of them would accidentally shoot me. In fact, actually, this has nothing to do with anything, but I just remembered it because it's a sad story. Yesterday, the cats were both here in this room, and I was trying to work. And usually when I work, a cat will jump up onto my lap and fall asleep. And the other one will, I've usually got a sweatshirt or something laying on the floor, and a cat will nuzzle up in that. Well, for whatever reason, the cats decided that they were going to use this room as their battleground, and they began grappling as they always do. And I should have talked about this with Vinny last night on the show because he witnessed this, but downstairs they'll be running around and grappling, and one of them will scare the other, and the scared one will leap straight up in the air. Not up, not back, not forward, straight up in the air, legs and arms out to the side, freaked out, and then take off, and they'll chase each other. They'll run up the stairs, and they'll run around the upstairs, they'll run down the stairs, blah, blah, blah. This is fine when you're downstairs. We've got what they call a great room now, where there's, like, no dining area. It's like the living room connects to the dining area, which connects in the kitchen. It's one enormous room. And we actually, when we bought the house, it's the number one thing we were looking for because we want to do pay-per-view parties, obviously, here. So you want a big, giant open area. So there's a big, giant open area. And the cats run around down there, and they act like idiots, and they run up and down on their new cat tree and all this and that. Well, that's fine in a big, open area, but in a closed area, bad times. These cats were running around, acting like idiots. One of them tears after the other. Amazingly, the fat one got out first. The door was cracked, and somehow the fat one got in between the door frame and the edge of the door. The little one, I don't know what happened, but she ran headfirst into that door. Saw it. And I just heard this thump of cat skull on wood, and I was like, oh! And I jumped up and walked over there. And, of course, when something like this happens, whenever a cat gets scared, they just stop. They stop. They look around in complete confusion, like, what the hell just happened? Like when the cat fell off the stairs a couple of weeks ago. Just this cat falls from the second story. I thought the cat was dead. But it just stood up. It looked around. Didn't do anything for a while. And then chased its sister again. But that's basically what happened here. This cat hit this door frame and just stopped. Dead stop. And I went over there, and it was unmoving, just looking at me like, what the heck just happened? And I picked it up, and I cradled it for a while, and it was making no noise, just looking at me. And then after a while, it started to purr, and then it got all squirmy, and I let it down, and the chase continued. But I just sat there thinking, we need to get like a doctor on here, like a Chris Nowinski that examines these head injuries, and find out what the ramifications are, if any, for cats running headfirst into door frames. Because these cats run into things all the time, and I'm not sure if these cats are getting concussions every time, if they're not going to remember where their food is at some point. It's very concerning for me, so Anyway, that's his cat story for today. That is it for the news segment here. We're going to be back in just a moment, joined by Carl Stern. We're going to talk about Weird Alabama, and it's going to be a fun time. You're listening to Figure 4 After Dark at figure4online.com. We are back here on the show. We are joined by Sergeant Carl Stern in Haleyville, Alabama. Carl, of course, a wrestling historian, but also a great fan of various aspects of the paranormal. He's seen a lot. He's heard a lot. Carl, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. I am, of course, Carl Stern of the Carl Stern Classic Wrestling Audio Show here at this very website, figure4online.com. If you haven't listened to it before, well, get to listening to it. I mean, for God's sakes, I put up a new show the other day, so check it out. Brian, real quick, I've just put up a new Facebook page under Carl Stern, so all the people from the website, do check that out. Friend me on Facebook, and I'll keep you updated with what's going on. And I tell you, it's 17 years I've had in the police business, and some strange stuff over the years. And I know you and I have talked about some potential topics for today, and I can't wait to get into it. So I'm with you. Let's just roll this thing.
You know, I want to thank you first off, actually, because you're one of the main people that encouraged me to do this when I brought up this idea. And I have to admit that, like, the last time that I was nervous starting a radio show was the very first time that I had to go live with Wrestling Observer Live after Dave left the show and I took over. The first segment was a disaster because I was just terrified. And I was nervous starting the show because I've wanted to do a show like this my entire life. And getting started on the first one, I was so nervous because as a fan of Art Bell, he cannot be touched as far as doing things like this. And I always had this feeling of, I would love to do this. I don't want to fail. So I had that kind of hanging over me as I started, but I'm quite confident that you're going to make this show great today. Far more than I will. So I'm very excited about that. And I wanted to mention first off, when we were just talking about this a couple of days ago, in fact, it was Tuesday. Maybe it was Wednesday, but a possible meteor, they're calling it, was seen over Arkansas. And did you happen to see it?
No, unfortunately, I missed it. It was seen actually over the entire southeastern United States. The first I became aware of it, actually, believe it or not, I was in my studio, which I've just reset up here, doing the last show, which I just talked about. And so I was sitting right beside a window, but it was really overcast here. We just had the ice storm apocalypse of doom down here, so it was kind of overcast. I didn't get to see it, but as I was surfing through the web, I started seeing reports of this. And I am a weather spotter and as part of my job duties and trained through a meteorologist out of Birmingham, Alabama, and he's actually a very famous meteorologist. His name is James Spann, and he's got a lot of national publicity for his kind of counter views on global warming. He is he is not on board with everyone on global warming like the consensus is. And so immediately I got a dispatch from him asking for input about this flash of light which had been seen. And so as it turns out, he's done a considerable amount of research into this flash of light, which he actually got in touch with Bill Cook of Marshall Space Flight Center, which Marshall Space Flight Center is located in Huntsville, Alabama, at the Space and Rocket Center, which is has large-scale models and actually has one of the rockets which went to the moon. And it's a great space museum, and they do a lot of scientific research there. And Bill Cook says that he can confirm there was, in fact, a fireball, he believes, but so far, no video footage has surfaced of the actual event, but several of their ELFO stations registered this, and those are infrasound stations which register atmospheric anomalies. But what's kind of strange about this whole deal is this occurred within a week of a mass animal deaths throughout Arkansas, and not only Arkansas, but some lesser-known ones during the same time period in Louisiana, and also one that most people haven't even heard about around Huntsville, Alabama. Again, a bunch of red-winged blackbirds were found dead along the interstate in Huntsville. Now, most of these have been explained as natural deaths. I believe they ultimately explained the one from Arkansas, the mass deaths, where there were thousands of these birds killed as a fireworks accident. But there seems to be a fairly widespread amount of animal deaths, and not just blackbirds, but also there was a fish kill in both Ohio and Louisiana, all around, just preceding this meteor strike. Now, the latest information they have is that there should be a impact of this alleged meteor somewhere in perhaps in south or central Mississippi. And the stations registered this moving from northeast to southwest, so it would have come across Ohio and not quite Arkansas, but within a reasonable distance of it and impacted in south central Mississippi. Now, is there any correlation between the two? Well, I think the fact that the flash of light happened after these animal deaths certainly would explain that away, but it's... when you've done law enforcement as long as I have, you discover that there's not really such thing as coincidence a lot of time. There is, if there seems to be a cause and effect, generally speaking, there is a cause and effect. Now, was there a correlation between these two? Well, I kind of doubt it, but I do find it very interesting that we have this mass animal die-off and this unsolved, quote, mystery flash of light. And as of this point, there's been no meteorite found, but that doesn't mean there won't be.
I always look at these things kind of in the opposite way, in the sense that I do believe that there are coincidences. And the thing with the animal deaths is, I don't even know if I buy the fireworks explanation. I mean, maybe I do, but to me, it's just, I think that there are animal deaths that happen quite regularly. And when a mass animal death makes headlines, then obviously the next mass animal death is going to make headlines, and it's kind of going to become sort of a, you know, one headline is going to breed another, and we're going to get kind of like a flap of animal deaths, kind of like a UFO flap, where if there's like a major sighting of a UFO, you know, I don't know, when people talk about UFO flaps, it's just that there actually have been a lot of sightings in a certain area, or if there are just sightings all the time, all over, and when one of them makes headlines, other people come forward and go, oh, Jesus, I saw this the other night, and so on and so forth, and the next thing you know, you've got a flap of a mass number of sightings all in one particular area. So I don't know, and I don't really know how to explain all of the animal deaths. I guess the one explanation I read that was somewhat interesting is the idea that the poles are slowly shifting, and whenever the magnetic pole shifts, it could screw up the navigation system internally of these birds. And really, with a flock, it would take maybe a bird or a couple of birds to fly out of formation, plunge to the ground, and the rest of them just follow them right into the earth. So I don't know what the deal is, but it's certainly interesting.
Well, I agree, too, that there could be as yet unformulated scientific explanation for these things, and in fact, it's almost certainly the case. One thing you were talking about, we were discussing coincidences and so forth. Well, one thing I have learned, and call me cynical, but I found it to be the truth. I just presume that people are lying to me from the get-go, and it serves me very well whether they are or not, because if they're not, in fact, lying to me, then the story will flesh out pretty easily. If they are, in fact, lying to me, well, then I knew that from the start, and I can get to the truth of the story. It's just what I do, and it's how I have to do it. And so if most people work from the opposite conclusion, they just assume people are telling them the truth and go from there. Well, I assume everyone's lying to me until proven otherwise. And working backwards that way, you do discover a lot of truth whereas before it wouldn't be. Now, I work for really the lowest level of government, the local level, the where it all starts. And over the years, I've certainly discovered an enormous amount of corruption, even on the lowest level. And so I can only imagine, as you step higher up the food chain, how much more widespread. And, of course, there's stories every single day of some politician somewhere being sent to prison for doing something, and that's just the stuff we hear about and know about. And even though sometimes I'm categorized as a, quote, conspiracy nut or whatever, the fact of the matter is that's not really true. I don't actually buy into most of the conspiracy theories. However, I do not discount them either, but I also work from the premise that the government's lying to me about something. Now, take, for instance, the 911 attacks. I'm certainly not a 911 truther by no stretch of the imagination. However, do I think we have been told all the truth about it? Absolutely not, but I also believe that about any everyday function of the government. So could mass animal deaths and flashes of light be explained as some kind of government conspiracy? Absolutely it could, but truthfully, probably not. Probably there's some scientific explanation for it, but again, are we being told what that scientific explanation is in truth? I highly doubt it. You take a flash of light. Could it be a meteorite? Oh, absolutely. That's the most usual explanation for such a thing. However, no meteorite impact's been found. Could it be a magnetic discharge in the atmosphere, akin to polar shifting? Well, absolutely that can happen too. Can that cause navigational problems in birds? Certainly it can. Can that cause, as you suggested, and one explanation has been offered, birds crashing into power lines has been one explanation, and several of these birds were found around high-voltage power lines. They get messed up and fly into there and die en masse. Absolutely, that could happen. So just because you question things does not make you a conspiracy nut. It makes you curious, and that I have no problem with.
Yeah, I always look at it. I take each different story. I mean, I'm open to a lot of different ideas, but I guess the best way I'll put it is this. I don't want to talk about 9/11 here on this show, but I will just say that the truthers that have all of their theories, to me, some of these theories would require so many hundreds, perhaps thousands of co-conspirators to make this thing work, that to me, it's far easier to believe the story that we have been told than this, quite frankly, ridiculous story that requires all of this stuff to go perfectly according to plan. Nobody's ever talked about it on the record. Nobody's ever come forward. Nobody's ever got upset about something and decided they were going to reveal the entire thing. That, to me, is... I find stories, conspiracies like that, hard to believe. If a conspiracy requires so much stuff to go perfectly right, especially involving the government, then to me it's kind of like, okay, I find this hard to believe. Whereas,
well, that's absolutely right, and I think that's one of the things that people need to keep in mind when talking about massive government conspiracies and stuff. It's hard enough for one person of themselves to commit a crime and to get away with it over the long term, that as you add more people, it becomes even less and less plausible because the stories fall apart, the stories don't match, distrust comes up between the two. And when you do that on a wide scale, especially, for the love of God, the government can't even pave my road correctly. How am I supposed to believe that they can orchestrate some gigantic terrorist attack or create some death ray that kills birds and fish and not let that some way somehow fall apart? Well, the answer is, use your common sense. Of course they can't do it. And that there's a lot of truth to the old adage of keep it simple, stupid. And that is very, very true. It is usually the simplest explanation. That's the correct explanation. But it doesn't always mean that the first explanation is correct. And I'm all for keeping an open mind.
I know we're not going to talk about wrestling on the show, but I'll just make a quick analogy from doing wrestling reporting. I've been told stories before where I've been told, you can't repeat this because I know, and this person knows, and now you know. So we're the only three, and if the story gets out, it's going to be pretty obvious what happened. So I don't mention anything, and then a couple of weeks later, the story is out, because maybe one or two other people ended up being told, and the entire thing fell apart. And to me, that's how it is with some of these vast conspiracies. They require too many people to keep a secret for too long a length of time. Now, the other example I was going to give is Roswell. I don't know what happened, but I do know that the government on multiple occasions has given an explanation for what happened, and they've changed it a good four or five times now. So to me, that tells me that something happened there. Did an alien ship crash? I don't know. Did a Japanese balloon end up over American soil and crash, and they had to keep that secret shortly after the war? I don't know. I don't know what happened, but my guess is that something had to happen, because otherwise there's no reason to change a story four or five times.
Several years ago, I took a extended vacation and got on my motorcycle, and I just headed west from where I live in Alabama. I just put a tent on the back of my motorcycle, and I set out to go. I'm known to do such things. I ended up in the desert southwest, and one of the places I ended up was, not coincidentally, Roswell, New Mexico. I'd always wanted to go there, and as I ended up in that part of the country, I just decided to stay there a night. And so I went there, rented a hotel room, and got on my bike and rode around to see. There are several museums there in Roswell dedicated, of course. The town, I really love the town of Roswell, New Mexico, because they have so tongue-in-cheek embraced this whole thing that is just fabulous. I love when people aren't so wrapped up in themselves that they're able to laugh at themselves, and Roswell is certainly a town able to do that. The Walmart,
well, it's also the best way that they can make money as a town.
Well, that's exactly right. Walmart there in Roswell, New Mexico, unlike all the other Walmarts, this one's painted green with little pictures of aliens across the front. The McDonald's, instead of saying X number of billions served, it says X number of billions of aliens served. I just find that stuff tremendous. But there are several museums there. Some of them are dedicated to selling trinkets and tourist traps and whatever. And then, of course, you have your fringe museums who all have an idea of what happened and why. And so after looking at all this in detail, stayed there a couple days and really enjoyed it, all my opinion is, having laid eyes on all this evidence myself personally, firsthand, is that absolutely something happened in Roswell, something that doesn't mesh up with the government story. Was it a spacecraft? Was it aliens? I have no idea if that's so or not, but what I do know is that the official story doesn't mesh with the evidence, in my opinion.
I want to talk today about some of the stuff that happens in Alabama. I, as mentioned before you came on the air, there's a book out, Weird Washington. They're books about all sorts of different states. I don't know if they've got all 50 states yet, but I know that they've done a number of them. And it's kind of interesting to look through the book, and you read about, for example, a supposed ghost of an Indian woman at the Pike Place Market. And you think, my God, I've been to the Pike Place Market a million times. I've never seen this woman, but I've been there. That's pretty interesting that somewhere that I've been is supposedly haunted. And I was really interested to see that they actually had an entry in this book about the Maltby Cemetery, which is supposedly, I guess, when I was in high school, I don't know if haunted is the right word, but when I was in high school, there were all sorts of legends about the Maltby Cemetery, and it supposedly had this hole that featured a staircase, and it was 13 steps, and nobody, I think the legend in my high school was nobody ever made it to the 13th step, because if you went down there, you'd die. And I guess other legends were if you made it to the 13th step, you'd see a vision of hell or this and that. So, of course, me and my friends had to go investigate. And, you know, we did so in broad daylight. We didn't go in the middle of the night like a lot of people do. We went in broad daylight, and it was extremely hard to find. It's like there's a housing area now, and so you have to trespass on private property, essentially, which we were really down on doing, particularly in the daylight. But it is very, very hard to find, and as far as I know, there are no steps there at this point, although everybody always says, man, you know, I knew a guy, and he actually went down those steps. But it was just fascinating to have been there, and I even filmed our trip there. I don't know where it is, but I filmed it. It's just fascinating to read about someplace that you've actually been, and it supposedly has all of these things that occurred there. And they're all over Washington State. So that's kind of my goal, to go to a lot of these different areas. And I did a little bit of investigation of Alabama, and there are certainly a lot of strange things there. And have you gone around the state and done investigations to various places?
Well, in reference to the list you're talking about, of some of the ones on there, there are a couple I have seen. In fact, some I've had recent experience with. But there are a few that I think are more of local renown that are not listed there. There's a really good book as far as Alabama hauntings go. In fact, it's a legendary book here in the state. It came out, I believe, in the 1970s, because I can remember hearing stories from this book when I was a kid. And the title of the book is 13 Alabama Ghosts and Jeffrey. And so if you go Amazon, I'm sure it's available there. I haven't looked to see. But this is the definitive ghost book for the state of Alabama. And everybody here knows it, and it's been updated several times. So if you can get a copy of that, I would highly encourage it. Now, some of the things that do correlate between the two books that I have personally seen, there are a couple. First of all, the biggest local legend here is the story of Aunt Jeannie Johnson. Now, Jeannie Johnson is also, I guess, better known under her real name, which is Aunt Jeannie Brooks. And she is actually buried about 5 miles from where I live now. I live in the middle of a national forest. It's the Bankhead National Forest of Northwest Alabama. And in the midst of that forest is one of the largest wilderness areas in the southeast, designated as the Sipsey Wilderness Area. And so there are just miles and miles and miles of old dirt roads with no houses, and these date back well into antiquity. These were the earliest roads in the state and so forth. And the story of Aunt Jeannie Brooks, the Reader's Digest version of it, is that she was a quite mean old lady whose sons were in relatively known as outlaws, and she ended up killing multiple people in vengeance of her sons. And so the story, as it goes, is there's an intersection, again, about 5 miles from where I live now. I've been there many, 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 many times, alone and with company. Everybody goes there. And supposedly, at certain times, she will come out and want a ride through the forest. I have known many, many people who claim to have picked up Aunt Jeannie Johnson along this deserted wilderness road. I have, unfortunately, never seen it. I've been there many, many times by myself on a motorcycle, in a truck, in a car, whatever, and I've never picked up Aunt Jeannie Johnson. I have been to her grave several times.
Now, hold on. Let me stop here very quickly. These are friends, not friends of friends, but actually friends of yours.
Yes, absolutely.
Friends of yours have picked her up. Now, what happens when she is picked up?
The story, as they claim, as people claim around here, it all passes around pretty much the same way. She'll be standing in the intersection. You'll stop. She'll get into your car, and she will ride to wherever she wants out at, and then she just vanishes. Usually, of course, coincidentally enough, she never gets in with more than one person. So that, I always find that pretty convenient, that the story goes, oh, no, she won't get in if there's two people in the car, only one, which, of course, does away with a corroborating witness. So, but unfortunately, I've never seen it. Her tombstone does regularly vanish. I have seen that. I've been there many times where her tombstone would be gone, but I think that can also be easily explained, and I'm sure there's several Aunt Jeannie Brooks tombstones floating around in various people's yards around here. But
so the tombstone vanishes and a new one is put down, or eventually it returns?
Sometimes it returns. Usually it's a new one put up. I bet the family has spent thousands and thousands of dollars replacing the tombstone. But as a matter of fact, the last time I was there, which was only, well, it's back around, of course, Halloween. Everybody always goes. Last time I was there, the tombstone was gone again. So, but funny enough, people always leave money on the grave, and I guess that goes toward the replacing of the tombstone.
Now, you, of course, have heard the legend of the vanishing hitchhiker.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a variation of that same story.
Sure. Yeah, that's one of the I remember, actually, the first book that I ever got on urban legends, that was the name of it, The Vanishing Hitchhiker. And I'm sure that legend is told all over the country. I'm always fascinated by those because usually, like in 90% of the cases in urban legends, you can never trace it all the way back to the very beginning. But in some cases, you can. And those are always the ones that fascinate me, where there actually was a story. It got perverted, and it became an urban legend. But, I mean, the vast, vast majority of them, it seems, you attempt to trace them back, and you could never find an original source for it. And sometimes people trace these stories back, and it's like, you know, you're going back hundreds of years. You're going back to, you know, Aunt Jenny was picked up in the 16th century by somebody on their horse. And when they got to the end of the woods, she was not on the horse anymore. So I'm always fascinated by those.
Well, here's one that is definitely traceable back. And I have seen this firsthand, so I absolutely can verify that this exists, seen it with my own eyes. About 45 miles from where I live now, there is Pickens County, Alabama, in a town called Carrollton, Alabama. And if you go to Wikipedia, you can look up the article yourself and Google it, and you can see the photographs. I have absolutely laid eyes on this many times myself. It is the famous face in the courthouse window of the Pickens County Courthouse. And the story, as it goes, and it, to the best of my knowledge, is a true story. There was a slave in the Civil War era who was arrested, most people now say wrongfully so, for burning down the original courthouse. A couple years later, he was captured and he was held in the courthouse. And as he was looking out the window, he was struck by lightning, and his face was superimposed on the window. There is, in fact, a very distinct, very definable face in the courthouse window. Again, you can Google the Carrollton Courthouse in Pickens County, Alabama. There are many very, very good pictures of this face in the window.
I'm looking at it right now, in fact.
People have tried to attribute this to a trick of light, which would be, in my opinion, probably the top surface explanation. However, many of the windows in the courthouse have been replaced, knocked out by hail, except for this particular window. This particular window still remains. They have tried, allegedly, to clean this window off many, many times since the late 1800s, and the picture remains. And again, it's a very distinct face. You can see it up close. You can go to Carrollton, Alabama. The square circles the courthouse. You can they have actually an arrow put on the side of the building pointing to it to leave no question where it is. And I don't know. Is that what happened? Well, it's a great story, and there's most certainly something there in that courthouse window. And I'm at a loss to find a good scientific explanation for it myself.
I was going to ask why they hadn't replaced that window, but once I saw the arrow pointed to the face, that pretty much answered my question right there. But yes, if you Google face in courthouse window and then hit images on Google, there are a number of them. And that is, in fact, a face in a courthouse window. You know, I was looking at the various different legends from the area, and you mentioned living in an area that is heavily wooded. And I talked about this also before you came on the air and talking about Washington. I was fascinated to see that there is a Goatman legend in Alabama. And, of course, I heard of the original Goatman legend from Maryland. And apparently they now, I guess he's branched out to a number of different states. And I guess when I think about Bigfoot, I'll basically give part of the speech I gave earlier since you weren't here. But I am not sold on it in the sense that I know that every year there are discoveries of new animals, but usually it's like a new fish was discovered deep in the sea or a new frog was discovered. It's never like, you know, obviously there are apes that are discovered here and there and such, but or monkeys, but I mean, there's never like a giant hominid discovered, or like some huge animal is discovered. So we see small animals or animals deep in the sea. So the idea that out in the woods in America in 2011, there's a giant beast that has not been discovered, has not been, there's never been a body found. You know, the best we've got are some hair samples and some plaster casts and the Patterson film. You know, a lot of this stuff to me is like, it's decent evidence. Like, I'm very interested in the Patterson film because I think that there's something there. I don't know. I'm not 100% sold that it's not a hoax, but I'm fairly confident. What it is, I don't know, but it's very fascinating. But I don't know. But when I look at, when I fly over Washington, for example, on the way to Vegas, and I see all of this wilderness, it's like, that's a lot of woods down there. That's a hell of a lot of woods that people, you know, either have never been in or have not been in hundreds of years or rarely go in. There's like a lot of woodland down there. And that sort of does make me think, you know, I don't know.
I have been at one point or another pretty much all over the Sipsey Wilderness. I regularly hike the trails there, and they're very frequently used. There's not a lot of absolutely pristine, unexplored wilderness left in America. There is, however, lots and lots and lots of tracts of empty land where people aren't regularly at. Could there be some undiscovered, like as you said, some human-sized hominid? Again, the thing that the kind of the deal breaker for me is just the lack of a body. If there had been as many Bigfoot as there have been Bigfoot sightings, someone would have come up with a carcass by now, I think. But I've seen some strange things come out of the forest, I'm just telling you. And so I can't say with 100% certainty that I'm sold that there's absolutely no Bigfoot, no goat man, no mothman, or whatever. I've seen some strange things myself, but nothing that so far has absolutely sold me on the fact that there's something out there we haven't discovered yet of quantity and of size.
Have you heard the Goatman legend from Alabama?
Unfortunately, no. I had never heard of it until you brought it to my attention. So I'm going to do some more research on that. That is quite interesting. I can't imagine why I didn't know we had a Goatman around here. But, yeah, that would be something I would definitely be interested in. But I tell you one thing we do have, and I will stand and argue this fact with anybody who says otherwise, and that is large cats. Sometimes they're described as black panthers. Sometimes they're described as cougars. But there are, in fact, large cats still roaming around the forest areas, the wilderness areas. While I have not seen one with my own two eyes, I do know enough people I do trust that have seen them to believe that this is in fact. I'm pretty sure I've heard one. I'm pretty sure I have heard one camping in the wilderness area before. I don't know what this beast was that was yelling in the night, but if it wasn't a giant cat, I don't know what it was. Now, we have plenty of bobcats, plenty of wildcats. People catch those all the time around here. But a couple weeks, actually it's been less than 2 weeks ago, I was working, and dispatch gave out a call, and I love my dispatcher because he doesn't even try to filter this for public consumption. He gives it out just as it comes in, which is great for my amusement anyway. And he says, "Haleville units, we have a report of a giant panther being held at flashlight point in a specific area here in town." So I hear this, and I go, oh, I got to answer that call. I got this one. And so I take off, and I'm within 3 minutes of where this call is, and I'm like, oh, I have got to get there. This is the most important call I've ever had in my life. I got to see this. So I get there, and sure enough, There are four people standing there. They have one of those bright mag lights, and they're pointed toward the woods, all frozen in position. And so I get out of the car, I walk there, and they say, "It's right over there." And so I look, and I have a powerful flashlight, having worked most of my career at night. And so I turn on my powerful flashlight, and I see nothing. Well, that scares me worse than seeing something. If I can lay out, fear is a great thing, because if I hear something scratching at the door and growling, I'm a lot more afraid than if I open up the door and I see Bigfoot standing there, because then I know what I've got, what I'm dealing with.
Sure.
I have information at that point.
Yeah.
The unseen is what scares me and most people, quite frankly. So there's nothing. So I go a little closer. And now I've got these four people creeping along behind me going, "Be careful. It's right there."
How big a gun did you have drawn?
I had no gun drawn because I intend to wrestle this thing with my bare hands, because that's a much better story. I mean, if I finally go down, it's not going to be in some standoff with a crackhead. I want to go down wrestling a panther.
Sure.
You got to tell me that's not business for this website. Absolutely.
That's the way to go.
I creep up and get in the edge of the woods, and as I step into the wood line, the guy behind me, swear God is my witness, in my ear goes, "It's as big as a deer." Well, okay, this is information I did not previously have. And so I go, in my head, I go, "Well, then, duh, it's a deer." And then the other half of me goes, "It's a cat as big as a deer." Well, I enter the woods. Unfortunately, I never see this gigantic, big as a deer cat ready to pounce and eat me. Although I know in the back of my mind it's right there about to eat me at any second. I look for signs, I look for tracks, anything. Just please confirm that there's some gigantic cat roaming the forest town of Haleyville, Alabama. This would just make my life and make my nights go by quicker. Sadly, I can report I found no evidence of such giant cat.
Did you enter these people's home?
No.
Because I'm wondering if they had kittens. And I'll tell you why. I think I mentioned this on one of the other shows, but my wife's family, they have two cats. And I always saw these cats, and they just struck me as cats. And then once we got kittens, these little tiny baby 3-month-old kittens, and we played with them every day, and I went back to that house. These cats looked gigantic. So suffice to say, if I had kittens and I went outside and there was, for example, a dark cougar lurking around in my backyard, that thing probably would look the size of a deer, perhaps an elephant.
Well, I greatly enjoyed that call. It was one of my favorites over the years. Oddly enough, apparently animals are going insane, because a month or so before this, I had a report of a person being attacked by a wild boar.
A boar?
A boar, yes. And this is, in fact, very possible, because there are wild boars everywhere here. Last year, actually, I guess it was 2 years ago now, I was hiking again through the Sipsey Wilderness area and with a few friends, and they had a teenage daughter, probably, I guess at that time she was 15, 16 years old, and she had run up ahead. And so I see her around the trail. She stops. She crouches down, bobs her head side to side, and then turns toward me running, wide open with her eyes as big as saucers. She comes up to my face and says, "There's a bear." Okay, there are, in fact, bears around here, but they are very, very few bears.
Sure.
So I go up ahead to, again, I want to wrestle this thing, my life against his. And I get there, and I look, and lo and behold, there is a black, furry creature about the size of what a bear should be just off the side of the trail. And I go, "My God, it's a bear." So I begin taking pictures, of course, before I attack this creature, and get some, and I love, this is my, I always love this, because I take the pictures, and of course they turn out all fuzzy, and you can pick out maybe an eyeball and part of some fur, you know, just enough to tease your imagination of what this thing is. And but so as I approach closer and closer and closer and get a stick to poke it with, of course, I get upon it and realize it's actually a wild boar, a very large wild boar. So they're all over the place here. I've seen them several times. That was my closest encounter with one. But apparently animals are just falling dead out of the sky, and boars and panthers the size of deer are attacking people.
See, that is kind of interesting in the sense that when I was growing up, I live in Bothell, Washington, which is not exactly the wilderness or anything like that, but there were certainly a lot more woods when I was younger. And when I was a baby, a bear ran through our yard. And you talk about heading up there on the trail and there's a what you think is a bear, but it's actually a wild boar. And it just sort of is like, okay, if there are these giant hominids out there in the woods, you would think that, and maybe I shouldn't say far more people would see them, because apparently a lot of people do. But I would just think that, and I guess you could argue that if they are I guess evolved enough, they would know better than to be near trails that humans come by. But I'm not sold. I would love to have a guest on someday to discuss this, but I'm not sold at this point. But have you ever investigated really the Patterson film, and what are your thoughts?
I love the Patterson film in that, again, it is so, it leaves so much to the imagination. This thing really looks good. And forensic investigators have looked at it and have measured it, and they say, oh, there's no way a human being can move this way, and there's no way this is that, and whatever. Well, just because something has forensic stamp to it does not make it the be-all and end-all. And, you know, life is not CSI, as I tell people. There's no magic machine you plug this stuff into and get the answer. I know that breaks a lot of people's hearts, but it's, in fact, a true story. I am dubious, in my opinion, of the Patterson film. I think I have the guy who came out later and claimed to have been in the suit in the Patterson film certainly made a convincing story. His walk, his gait, certainly was very similar to what we saw in the Patterson film. I'm afraid, as much as I don't want to, I got to call hoax on the Patterson film. I'm just not sold on it after seeing that thing a million times. I love it. It's certainly convincing, but I just don't think it stood up over the test of time.
It does kind of, I guess you could make the argument that when a guy says, I'm going to go out and film Bigfoot, and then he's successful, I don't know, you know? I mean, I guess you could also argue that if I were going to do a Bigfoot hoax, and I put Vinny in a Bigfoot suit, which actually probably would be a pretty good rendition. I mean, I don't know if I would announce in advance, I am going to the woods this weekend, and I am going to film Bigfoot, which obviously is not exactly the way that they termed it, but they were attempting to do a documentary, and by God, there's a Bigfoot there. So, you know, part of you could argue that, okay, well, that's a dead giveaway that is a hoax. But then there's the other part of you that thinks, okay, if I were going to hoax that, would I announce I am going to film a documentary, and my God, I just happened to see one? I don't know if I'd do that. The coincidence there almost helps their tale in some ways.
Oh, absolutely it does. And again, you what is so difficult about these things is that on the surface, most of the time, they do seem to have credibility. You see these snippets of tape, you see these photographs, you hear these stories, and on the surface, your brain says, does not compute. There's no sound explanation. But like so many things, you have to take the totality of the evidence and form an opinion only then. And sometimes you don't have that totality of evidence, and that's what opens the door for wild speculation and for conspiracy, is the lack of hard evidence. The Patterson film has been around for so long, and there's been so much time and chance to study it and for it to fall apart. And because it, in a lot of ways, has fallen apart, but in some ways it still stands up, that's what makes these stories great. There is still a kernel of believability there. And if, again, you accept everything as truth from the get-go. You can latch on to it. I have a more difficult time with that. Guilty till proven innocent.
Now, you did mention that you'd seen some weird things come out of the woods, and presumably none of those would have been Bigfoot, based on your recent statements. But what have you seen coming out of the woods?
Some strange people. They're very odd people who, I suppose, make a life of living on these wilderness trails. I know the Appalachian Trail, there's a culture, an absolute subculture of people who live on these trails, who make a life of being minimalist, just living on the minimum things possible. And I've met many of these people, and obviously these are socially different people, and so you naturally their stories are going to be colorful, but also often not so believable. When I worked in a previous town that was even deeper in the woods than where I am now, you regularly had reports of strange things being seen in the yard, just glimpses of things crossing the highway, and you know it's some sort of wildlife, but what that wildlife is in the middle of the night blurring across the road. Well, your imagination can run wild, and I think that's what happens a lot of times. But again, makes for some good stories.
Dead Children's Playground. What do you know about that one?
I know it only by reputation, and again, this is up around Huntsville, Madison County. There is, I believe, a cemetery, and it's Maple Oak something Hill Cemetery. I can't remember. Maybe it's Maple Hill Cemetery. But anyway, Madison County, which encompasses the Huntsville area, supposedly, the story as I've always heard it told is, and maybe this is a different than what you're familiar with, supposedly in a playground near this area, there can regularly be seen phantom children playing. Never been there, but it's one of those things I've always heard about. Again, a lot of people say they see these children playing there like late wee hours of the morning, and so immediately in your brain you go, children shouldn't be out playing at that time, so therefore it's a ghost. Is that in fact what's happening? I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. That's one of those things I'd like to go check out, though, for sure. I'm not 100% certain where it's located at. I think it's kind of east of Huntsville, but close to downtown proper. Maybe one of these days I'll go and I'll call you in with a live report.
That's what we need, is a live report from the Dead Children's Playground. Just the name of it. I don't know about that one. How about Crybaby Hollow? Apparently they're all over the South.
Oh, absolutely. Crybaby Hollow is tremendous. Every community seems to have one, but the actual one that spawned the name, the, I guess, authentic, original Crybaby Hollow, is, again, here in the same wilderness area I've been talking about. It's Crybaby Hollow's about maybe 20 miles from where I live. I have been there a few times, and something going on there. I don't know what. Have I ever heard a baby crying at this bridge? And, of course, the story or the variation of the story is always that at some point in time, some mother in antiquity has thrown her child off this bridge, and you can still hear it crying. Or there was an accident there, and you can hear the child. But the basics of the story is there's a bridge in the woods, and you can hear a baby crying if you're on there. This bridge is located, again, on one of these ultra-secluded forest roads. It is, oddly enough, very near a cave, a very extensive cave network in the National Forest that also has haunted legend attached to it. And so I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, but one of these two, I suppose, inspired the, either the Crybaby Holler inspired the Haunted Cave or the Haunted Cave inspired the Crybaby Hollow. I've been there. It's really creepy. Even by my standards, it's very creepy. Of course, everybody, as they stand on this bridge at 3 o'clock in the morning with nothing but forest around them, hears something, be it in their mind or in reality. I can't say I've ever heard a baby crying, but I will tell you it is absolutely authentically one of the creepiest places I've been in my life.
You know, if I were walking across a bridge, and we don't have Crybaby Hollows around here. That's not a Northwest legend, apparently. I'd never even heard of that till I was doing some research for this show, but apparently they're all over the South. If I were walking over a bridge and say I heard a strange noise, or I heard something in the water, or I heard some guy's voice or something like that, or even if I saw like a strange mist, I don't know if I'd be all that terrified, but let me tell you, if I heard children crying or laughing, I would be terrified. That's the one right there. Terrified.
Well, again, too, I think the setting is the most important part of this story, because this, I don't know what you're picturing in your mind as this bridge and this hollow, but let me tell you what it in reality is. A one-lane dirt road through the middle of the wilderness area. The bridge is a wooden, old, creaky, maybe the car will go across it, maybe it won't, bridge with metal railings looking off a crevasse with a small stream through there. So, yes, the setting is everything in this particular story, let me just tell you.
We had a question here on the board. As a person who works in the police department and is surrounded by woodland areas, do you have any reports of satanic things occurring in the forest?
Oh, that was a big deal about 20 years ago. About 20 years ago, when I graduated high school, that was the height of the satanic people in the forest era. Now, since then, of course, you know, Satanism as a whole and the whole subculture of that has kind of largely evaporated. You don't hear so much of that anymore. But back in my day, so to speak, it was at the height of its popularity. You had a Black Sabbath, you had Dio, you had all these very dark music going on, and of course, you know, rumors that the Eagles were involved in some the Hotel California album and the whole Anton LaVey, and so the height of satanic hysteria was kind of at its peak then. And so the story, as I was a senior in high school, was a black van, of course, was going around looking for blonde-headed virgins to carry to the wilderness area to sacrifice. And we all, of course, just believed this story to be true, that because couldn't possibly this, I mean, what could possibly be wrong with this story? So it was, in fact, a true story to us. And so everyone was on the lookout for this black van. And it was linked to a cult of Satan worshipers, which, of course, where else in the forest would you go to have your satanic rituals other than Aunt Jenny Johnson's crossroads? And, of course, we had to go investigate. And it didn't hurt that there was a bootlegger within a close proximity, so you could stop and get a fifth of Jack Daniels and drive through the forest at 17 years old and drink whiskey and look for Satanists. You know, what could, you tell me where the credibility problems are with this story. So as we lurk through the forest with a pickup truck load in the back of 17, 18-year-olds looking for these Satanists, because we are, of course, by God, going to put a stop to all this, we approach the Aunt Jenny Johnson's crossroads, and we look through the forest, and true story, God is my witness, what do we see other than a forest fire? The forest is on fire in the distance.
Gotta be kidding me.
This is, of course, explained only by human sacrifice.
Sure.
Swear to God, this happens. Of course, as soon as someone spots the forest fire, everybody goes, chunk the beer. which is, of course, what happens. And then we flee for our lives from these Satan worshipers who have inadvertently set the forest on fire with their human sacrifice.
What year were you in high school?
I graduated in 1989.
89. Reason I ask is because do you remember the phantom clowns in the early 80s?
Oh, absolutely I do, yes.
Same exact deal almost.
Wow, but aren't they still undefeated in Mexico or something?
They lost, but...
Okay.
Yeah, the early 80s, there were all the reports of the van and clowns were getting out to steal children.
Well, of course, that has its... I'm sure that has its origins in the John Wayne Gacy stuff, so... You know, there's usually, there's often a kernel of truth to some of this stuff.
I always wanted to, I don't think I've ever even heard anyone do a show anywhere on the Phantom Clowns, but I was always fascinated by that particular story right there. Now, other Huntsville legends, I know you're not in Huntsville, but I'm sure you've heard of most of these. I enjoyed this one here because of the way that I read about it on a message board. There was a list of various legends, and one person wrote about Hell's Gates, and they said, there are a set of big black gates, stand about a mile from the bottom of the mountain, guard some huge mansion. If you go and sit in front of the gates for a little while, a car will come down the mountains and chase you until you get to the bottom, and the car will suddenly vanish, and they added, it's no myth!
Well, is it ever? And again, I think we can see credibility problems immediately with this story. If you are on private property waiting to see some haunted place, is it without reason that you might, in fact, be chased away by a car?
Well, you might.
Yeah. I think if you're hyped up on adrenaline waiting for a ghost car to chase you away, then that's probably exactly what's going to happen.
But the vanishing car, I'm sure, is the key to the story.
Maybe it's driven by ninjas or phantom clowns, perhaps.
How about the Carter Mansion?
The Carter Mansion I'm a little more familiar with. I actually had no knowledge of the Hell's Gate, but the Carter Mansion is actually pretty well known in this area. It's I understand it's, and again, I think this is actually, if we're speaking of the same Carter Mansion, this is actually in Elizabethton, Tennessee, which is just across the Tennessee state line from Huntsville. And again, I think the key to the Carter Mansion, and again, you can Google all this up, and there's a lot of information there on there, is the setting of the whole thing, because you've got old, creaky, covered bridges. This, of course, the Carter Mansion itself looks like it's right out of a horror movie. It's just a two-story, whitewashed, Civil War-era building just sitting in the middle of a bunch of old, creaky-looking oak trees. So, again, you have the... In fact, this thing looks... I can't remember what horror movie this is from, but I swear this is the... It looks exactly like some horror movie I saw this house in before. So, again, I think setting is everything.
I remember when I was a kid, we went to Camp Casey, and I can't for the life of me remember all the details of this, but there was a, I don't know if it was like a bomb shelter, or there was some sort of concrete building that they took the kids on a tour of, and maybe it was there was a mansion on the grounds that was supposedly haunted or something like that, but I know that, like, supposedly when they were building the concrete building, somebody of course died and was buried in the concrete, but his last gasp of air, whatever, he reached with his hand out, and so somewhere in there, there's no light, so you walk through it in the dark, supposedly, like, somewhere in there you might, you know, run into his hand. And
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they took fifth graders through this thing, and of course we're all just terrified. But that was a story that they told from Camp Case. I forget all the details. I'm sure somebody listening to this probably remembers, and we'll talk about it someday. But I distinctly remember that. I think it was a haunted mansion or something like that. The Colonel's Mansion? I don't remember. But, yeah, it was something like that. What about Owens Crossroads?
Owens Crossroads is the name of a community. And I've been to Owens Crossroads many times. In fact, a good friend of mine who also has a pro wrestling connection, his name is, he wrestled under the name Bomber Jack Lord lived in Owens Crossroads for a long time, and so he has ties to the old Continental promotion. But I had no idea, actually, there was a paranormal legend attached to it. So what do you have on that? Because I've not heard this story that I'm aware of.
I just was, they actually put it kind of, I think it was linked with the Hell's Gate, so it may be something similar. I'm not even sure. I'd have to,
because it's in the similar area. So yeah, there's again, which come first, chicken or egg? I don't know, but I have a feeling that some of these things inspire the other stories, and sometimes I think people go looking for Aunt Jeannie Johnson's, and when they realize they can't find it, they find themselves sitting on the old bridge, so they develop a story to go along with that at times. Although, again, like I said, of all the things I've seen and all the things I've experienced, Crybaby Holler is probably the creepiest.
What about Decatur High School?
Yeah, again, I don't know what the Decatur High School story is. Decatur is, again, very close to here. It's kind of a Huntsville and Decatur sort of twin cities, even though they're separated by about 30 miles. It's referred to as the Huntsville-Decatur area, and Decatur is actually closer to where I am than Huntsville is, and so I'm regularly in Decatur. I have been to Decatur High School before for certain training and so forth. The state police rent classrooms from them from time to time to have schools at. So I've been there, but unfortunately, I have no story to tell because I didn't know what I should be looking for.
I think it's the list that I've got is just generally various areas in the state of Alabama where hauntings have occurred. Not necessarily any particular story, but just, you know, various things have been seen.
A few years ago, I was doing a genealogy, and my family had always told the story of I had a great-grandfather who was described variously as a hobo, a derelict, that he would come and just disappear for years at a time and then reappear here. And the story that had always been floated around amongst that side of the family was that he had been killed by a train in Decatur, and he had been run over, I guess, by a damned old train. And so my sister and I went to Decatur to the library in hopes of researching old newspaper on microfilm to see if we could find any evidence. So we had narrowed this possible death date down to within a couple of years, and so we went through looking at some of the old microfilm. And this is where I fell in love with 1800s-era newspaper, because the obituaries in 1800s-era newspapers are fantastic. We just do not write obituaries like we used to, and it's a sad lost art. As I read over and over again the tales of you know, nowadays you look and it says John Smith passed away at the age of 80, and he will be at, you know, Joe Bob's funeral home from such and such a time. Well, that don't tell me nothing. I go back and I look at 1800s era newspaper, and I see where Betty Adkins went to meet the death angel as she tripped and fell into the fireplace and burned to death on Christmas Eve.
Oh,
now, that's
terrible.
A story for you right there.
That is a tale.
Yes, and so as we investigated that, while we never did find Grandpa being run over by a damned old train, we did, in fact, find many tales of poor Mr. Smith falling into a well as he went home to meet the Lord by the Lord's choosing, by drowning to death, falling into a well. I certainly hope my obituary at some point in time reads, went to meet the death angel by wrestling a panther.
Or a wild boar.
Or a wild boar. And then I will know I have lived a complete life.
I should note, by the way, when we were talking about the dead child's playground, the cemetery, within the cemetery limits, apparently there is a playground there with swing sets and the whole nine yards. So
yes,
you
yes.
want to go visit the playground and have somewhere for your children to hang out. What better place?
Yeah, they'll have apparently people to play with.
Oh, my God. Anyway, the You mentioned the Lord, going to meet the Lord, and wanted to ask you about this. It's not really anything, I guess it is legend related. Up here in the Northwest, we have a lot of legends about, you know, obviously there's a Native American theme, you know, with the Pike Place Market and that sort of thing, and hauntings, obviously, and Bigfoot and that sort of thing, even lake monsters, actually. But we don't have a lot of legends about the devil himself, whereas it seems in the South there are a number of those. And are there any legends in the Alabama area, your neck of the woods, or any calls you may have received from perhaps someone who was afraid that the devil was at his home?
Well, clearly, I live in smack dab on the buckle of the Bible Belt, as it is called. I myself do claim to be a religious man, and there are many, many tales of Satan himself coming upon the state, the most famous of which there is a legendary song written, When Stars Fell on Alabama. There is a truth to this song. In the 1800s, the late 1800s, post-Civil War, there was an exceptional meteor shower observed in the state of Alabama, to the point of which people believed the world was coming to an end. Now, this was not an isolated incident. This was a widespread panic where people came out, went to their churches because they believed the world was, in fact, coming to an end, and it formed the well-known phrase here. In fact, it was even on our car tags for many years, may still even be, saying stars fell on Alabama. There was a legendary song written, I forget, by one of the famous singers of yore, and that was what it was about. It was, in fact, the end of time had come here in Alabama as stars fell on Alabama, and many people came out. One of the most, I guess, well-known things that people hear often about is snake-handling churches.
Oh, God.
Yes, in fact, I can confirm while there are very, very few of them, and most of them located in the Appalachian foothills in northeast Alabama, there are, in fact, a few snake-handling churches which still remain. And, again, that harkens back to a scripture that says you should be able to handle poisonous vipers without harm, and that is a test of faith. And some people have taken that quite literally, and I grew up hearing tales many times of snake handling, where they would pass around a cardboard box containing a rattlesnake, and those of strong, sound faith would handle such snake without being bit in church. Now, being as that I never knew anyone to be bit in church, one of two things happened. Either they had great faith and it worked, or the story was a bunch of bunk.
We're running a little bit low on time here, but I want to make sure that we address this, because you mostly hear about these things, I guess, in the Southwest. Seems to be like sort of a Southwest deal. But apparently there are incidents in Alabama as well of cattle mutilations.
That's fascinating, because apparently there is strong scientific evidence to support that cattle have been mutilated almost surgically, in fact, quite surgically, with various parts removed. And so what's the explanation for that? Oftentimes, black helicopters, of course, are seen along with this, where the pop culture black helicopter reference comes from. Of course, aliens have been attributed to this. There was a rash of cattle mutilations in northeast Alabama. I guess it was probably 10 or 15 years ago now. Made the news, footage of this, these mutilated cattle all over the news. What's the explanation for this? I don't know. I have to say that is one of the things that quite stumps me, is the cattle mutilation. Now, obviously, the easiest explanation is that it's sick pranksters who are going forth and doing this for, much like crop circles, they're creating a story. But I've got to say, something going on there too, and I'm not quite sure what the explanation of it is.
Thing with cattle mutilations, which I've always found interesting is it's always the farmer that goes out and discovers that his cattle has been mutilated. Now, if, for example, I left my house and there are some cattle, actually, down the road. Drive down the road and all the cows are there. And there happened to be a dead cow that was all cut up. If I went and looked at it and I said, must be an alien. This is surgical precision that cut this thing up. People would say, what do you know about cows? And it's a valid point. When a farmer goes out, and I'm sure that he's seen his share of cattle that have been ravaged by animals, and then he sees a cow that appears to be mutilated surgically, I mean, I trust that farmer to know the difference between the two. So, I mean, it seems to me that something is going on, but when I hear the explanations are always the ones that kind of drive me nuts. You know, the people that say, well, the government is picking up these cows and in these black helicopters, and they mutilate them, and then they drop them from these helicopters when they're done. I'm always thinking, you're telling me that the government has no place to farm their own cows? They have to go steal them from farmers? I mean, there's no better way for them to solve this problem of needing cows. And then when you hear about the idea of, well, perhaps aliens are picking them up in UFOs and draining them of their blood and dropping them back to the earth, again, the question remains, why would this be being done? Why would they need to pick up these cows, drain them of blood, and then leave the cow behind? You know, it's just like, I'm looking for some sort of logical explanation for these theories, and none of them make any sense to me.
I'm in the same boat. The motivation does not make any sense. Again, as you said, I'm sure the government has plenty of access to cattle without having to use black helicopters to go research them in the middle of Farmer Joe's pasture. Aliens, I don't know. Certainly, I think that is a conclusion you could jump to because it would make sense that they would need to dissect animals to learn from them, other than the fact that you're attributing this to aliens.
Well, exactly. So, and on that same topic, okay, if you needed to extract the blood from a cow to, I don't know, whatever you need blood for in your investigation, then you, Carl, would probably go out, mutilate a cow, get some blood, and go on your merry way. We're supposed to believe that these alien beings have come from across the galaxy. They've come hundreds of thousands, millions of miles to get here. They've perhaps come however aliens get here. There are many different theories that people expound. Yet, despite all of this technology, they still need to pick them up, drain their blood, and then drop them back to the Earth. There has to be a better way.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the major flaws of that. If you have figured out how to warp space and time to travel millions of light years to get to Earth to begin with, I would think you would look somewhere beyond cows for your information.
Yes, presumably they would come from more than millions of miles. Throw that out there. Millions of light years. But it's the same thing. I would have an easier time believing that a satanic cult, even though this satanic cults to me largely an urban legend, in fact, probably almost entirely an urban legend, but I would have an easier time believing that a bunch of dudes went out in the woods with a switchblade and sliced these cows up for whatever reason than aliens pass through interstellar space to come to Earth and pick them up in UFOs, drain them of blood, and drop them back to the Earth.
Yes. I don't have an explanation for this. Nothing makes any sense, and that's where legends grow from. When things don't make sense, the mind fills in the blanks, and you come up with black helicopters and aliens mutilating cattle. That does not compute.
Carl, you're heading to work here soon, and final question, what is the strangest call you've ever gotten?
The strangest call? I should have been better prepared for this because I get to ask this question a lot, especially on my show, and recently I was asked something similar, and The thing is, it's kind of like Larry Madison the other day rating the top 50 wrestlers. You've just got to kind of put them in clumps. You know, I don't know that one thing is stranger than another, but I suppose of recent history, it was certainly the cat the size of a deer call would be very strange. But going back into the recesses of my lengthy career in law enforcement, I suppose it has to be the tale of the man with no head who was seen in my yard.
What?
Yes. I was working in a different jurisdiction at this point several years ago, very rural area, not in the forest, but in a equally secluded area, where I received a prowler call. I arrived at this call, and the person who appeared to me to be rather sane said, "Yes, I saw somebody around back of my house by those trees over there. They went through my yard." I said, "I will go investigate this." She said, "There's something I need to tell you, and you're not going to believe it." I said, "Well, you will be surprised what I will believe, but go ahead." And she said, "I could not see a head on their body." This struck me as odd.
I'll say.
And so I said, "Do tell. Are you sure it was a person? Could it have been an animal? Could it have been someone crouching or just turned?" She said, "No." Just very matter-of-factly, she said, "No, as strange as this sounds, I'm pretty sure they were standing looking right at me, but they didn't have a head." Well, this bear's looking into. So I go out, and, you know, it's the middle of the night. You're not going to do a lot of tracking. I saw no outward evidence that anybody had been in the yard. I did not, sadly, find a head or a headless body. But the woman seemed very convinced. She seemed largely sane, other than seeing a headless body in her yard, and she was quite matter of fact about it.
Now, when you say headless body, this was not a headless dead body. This was an animated body.
Yes, this was an, according to her, an animated headless body checking around her property. I presume to mutilate cows. I'm not sure, but I could find no motivation for this or evidence for this, and never again did I encounter such a call, so I'm at a loss to explain that one, too.
I would be interested in asking this woman how he was surveying her property with no head.
I guess it just comes down to a feeling, I suppose.
Hmm. And I would ask her if she knew whether or not she was certain he was walking forwards or backwards.
Too bad tape doesn't exist of this, and we could compare it to the Patterson film and see.
I need the police report on this one here so that I can give this lady a call and ask her more about the headless man surveying her property.
Yeah,
well, Carl,
I should have made a report there, I suppose.
You'll know next time. Carl, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. I want everyone to check out carlstern.com. And, of course, if you enjoyed today's show, you should make sure to check out the Carl Stern Show on this very website. It's part of your subscription package. You get full access to all of Carl's shows, both here and in the archives. And if you do a search, you can find the show where Carl talked about the meth lab explosion that he investigated, which is a fine tale. But I'm going to make you search the archives for that one as opposed to telling it here on this program. But Carl, it's been a fun time, and I'm sure at some point we're going to have you back on and talk more about all of this stuff. And I want to thank everybody for listening. This was a lot of fun. And at some point down the road, hopefully very soon, we're going to do another one. So everybody take care and have a good night.